This is Radio Boston. I'm Megan Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Gish Jen is the award-winning Cambridge-based author of four novels, including Typical American and Mona in the Promised Land.
And as her name implies, Jen embodies the fluidity found in many modern East-West identities. Her Chinese ancestry and American life have made their way into her writing, but the impact the two cultures have had on the sheer act of writing itself, well, that perhaps is not so clear. Narrative means different things in East and West. It takes different shapes and has different purposes. That tension has played out rather beautifully, I'd say, in Jen's own life as, quote, a struggle between Emerson and Confucius, as Gish Jen herself puts it. She explores that struggle in her new nonfiction book, Tiger Writing, Art, Culture, and the Interdependent Self. She joins us now. Gish Jen, welcome to Radio Boston.
Oh, it's wonderful to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. Now, I know that any conversation that has to do with trying to understand different cultures, especially between East and West, can be rather fraught because people think broad generalizations are being made. That's not what we're doing here. And in fact, that's one of the things that I found most compelling about your book is that it's this nuanced sort of exploration about how narrative and writing and the art of the novel really sort of has played out in your life and your family's life and what that tells us about how culture influences story. So let's just dive right into that. And let me ask you, I was so taken when you said that you felt this struggle between Emerson and Confucius within your own self. Can you tell me a little bit more about what you mean by that?
Well, what I mean is that I grew up in a culture where, that was where the self is a self that exists in relationship to other people. Do you know what I mean? So it's not about the truth within. It's about others, right? Mm-hmm. It's always about your role in society, your duty, what you should be doing, right? But then I grew up in a world where it was dominated by Emerson. It is about the truth within. It's what I want, right? It's not what I'm supposed to be doing. It's what I want to do. These are two very, very different cultural frameworks, yeah, to put it mildly.
Well, we'll talk about in a moment how that's played out, I actually think, to great effect in your writing itself. But in order to give people sort of a picture of an example of how a narrative might be constructed or written from a Chinese perspective, I mean, you write about your father's own autobiography that he wrote in his 80s. Can you tell us why that was interesting to you and what makes his version of an autobiography different than what we might popularly presume, in the West?
Well, you know, in the West, we imagine that a narrative begins like David Copperfield, right? I am born. But my father, when he sat down to write his autobiography at age 86 about growing up in China, he does not start with I am born. In fact, he does not even mention his birth until page 8 of his narrative. And then it is in parentheses and in conjunction with another event.
So his emergence into the world was a parenthetical thought in the story of your family.
Exactly right. So his quote-unquote autobiography is not the story of his life. It is the story really of the Jen family. So in his mind, his story, if you will, starts in 1131, you know, when the Jens moved to, you know, our hometown of Yixing, China. So this is, you know, the Song Dynasty. It's 28 generations ago. And that's when he thinks the story starts.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to pass judgment on what's better, you know, East
right.
or West
There's
style. That's not what we're
right.
doing here. But upon hearing your example of your father's autobiography, I find that to be quite compelling, actually. Like, here's a man who's placing his life in the context of lives and events that sort of surrounded and led up to him. I mean, that seems to be rather a powerful narrative style.
Well, you know, I think that it's a powerful picture for us in the West. I mean, I think in truth, because we are so individualistic, I think we do have a kind of yearning for a kind of world where you are a tiny, tiny piece of a large a big picture that really means something. You know, to us in the West, we think that's really, a magical thing, really. And yet, our narratives are not that way. And I think that if you were to sit down with my father's narrative, you would mostly feel baffled, like, well, when is he going to start the story? Like, well, what is this, you know? I mean, I myself coming to it was quite confused. I mean, there was a part of it that was very, very familiar to me. And yet at the same time, it so confounded the expectations that I've developed as a reader all these years that, you know, it actually took me, you know, a year or two before I really understood what this was about. I mean, just knowing how to read it was not at all clear to me.
So you said something interesting there about expectations we have as readers. Take me into, if you could, like, what are the expectations that, say, a Chinese reader of a Chinese narrative or autobiography would have?
Well, I don't know that, you know, autobiography is not a highly developed form in the East. I don't think it's any surprise to hear. And I think that even when you look at hybrid narratives, you know, people who were born in the East but are telling their stories in the West, I mean, even now there are features of those narratives that many in the West find surprising. A great example of this, I think, was actually Salman Rushdie's memoir, which you may remember he wrote just about a year ago, about growing up, you know, about his experiences under the fatwa. And, you know, Rushdie very interestingly said that he had trouble writing it in the first person. You know, he tried and it just would not go. And in the end, he had to write it in the third person. He wrote the whole thing as he, which many, many reviewers and many, many readers found very strange. Mm. But I didn't find that strange.
Well, so tell me more about that. I mean, you touched upon it a little earlier about how growing up, you know, in a Chinese American household, but in the American experience in the United States, that sometimes you found that there was a tension between those two worlds. Other times, you know, maybe not. When did it sort of the blending of the two begin to make sense to you in a way that informed your writing?
Well, you know, I think that I was a huge reader growing up, and I will say that, you know, I was reading and reading and reading. You know, probably one part of my reading was just educational. You know, I do come from, you know, a background that stresses education, so, you know, that was part of it. Part of it was simply wanting to understand my context, and, you know, there are many, many studies that, you know, that suggest that people from a non-Western background are far more concerned with the context than people from especially an American or a British background, where they're much more concerned about, you know, about themselves and self-knowledge. So I was reading for context, and I was reading, like I say, in an educational way. But weirdly, what I discovered was, I mean, I did discover, you know, things about the context, but I also discovered that in the West, narrative was about the self. You know, that was kind of the biggest discovery of all. And I did internalize that model, you know, so that if I were to write a story today about a given protagonist, you know, I would start with the protagonist. You know, I would not start with their great, 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 great grandparents, right? I would start, you know, I would say that is where the story begins. Right. And I would do that. And
if I may.
Of course.
I mean, in your new book, Tiger Writing, Art, Culture, and the Interdependent Self, you do hold up yourself as an example of how, you know, sometimes maybe it's not so clear, like, should the protagonist be other-focused, as we've been talking about, or self-focused? Because you say that in your most recent novel, World and Town, the protagonist of that book, a character named Hattie Kong, in the original version, before your editor got her hands on it, Hattie Kong was, quote, in your words, a set of eyes and ears with no real story of her own. And so she might have stayed were it not for your editor's gracious nudging.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. Okay, so I will say that, so it's not always on the first draft. But eventually, you know, I do focus on the protagonist in a way which is probably seen as, you know, kind of mainstream Western, mainstream Western way. Sometimes it takes nudging to get there. That said, many interdependent features remain. I mean, you will see that, you know, Hattie Kong is, you know, in World in Town is focused on herself to a reasonable degree, but she takes a huge interest in her community and making that community into a kind of family by the end of the book. And I do think that that is a holdover, if you will, from my Eastern self, or a way that my Eastern self has come to dovetail with my Western self.
Well, another way that you put it in terms of the, quote, Eastern self and Western self is you just used the phrase just now, interdependent, to sort of broadly categorize an Eastern perspective versus independent. To broadly categorize a Western perspective. Now, I don't want to talk about it in a manner that makes it seem that the two are mutually exclusive, right? Because do you make the argument that maybe the novel itself as a form is where those two ways of being can come together?
That is absolutely right. I do think the novel is a place where they can come together. But when we talk about interdependence, you know, that's the term the psychologists like to use today. I think most people think of that self, an interdependent self, as a collectivist self. And I think most people think of the term, you know, independent self as an individualistic self. So, you know, of whatever reason, the psychologists have their own jargon today. But yes, I mean, I do think because the novel has always been the place where the individual has you know, has come to confront society, it is a very natural place for these two selves to be coming together.
So in this day and age where we have a fantastic and increasing number of writers such as you who come from, you know, non-Western backgrounds but have grown up in the United States, and they are bringing these stories of different societies, different cultures, different groups, and as you say, how individuals confront issues within those groups, this seems to be a really interesting way of understanding sort of the role that perhaps these novels are playing in American literature right now, that it's a whole different way of seeing, you know, the self in American society.
Well, that would be my dream.
I love being idealistic here. I mean, do you think that is possible, that we're actually learning more because of the fact that we're seeing more of interdependent selves as protagonists in novels versus the David Copperfields of the 19th century?
Yeah, I think that the increase, if you will, in the number of interdependent with writers with an interdependent background in American literature actually dovetails with a time in American society when I think many people are quite disenchanted with the extreme individualism that we have here. So I think that, you know, you could actually see this during our election, you know. You know, all the people who really resonated, you know, to Obama's theme of we're all in this together. You know, and, you know, there's it's very interesting to me. I taught The Catcher in the Rye, you know, not too long ago. And, you know, there was a time when everybody agreed that Holden Caulfield, you know, who, if you, as you remember, saw all upstanding members of society as phonies. You know, everything about society was phony. There was a time when he was everyone's hero. Today, if you teach Catcher in the Rye, a lot of the students feel like, well, what was his problem? You know, I mean, I think that there's a way in which all of that alienation just seemed to kind of dead end. And I think today people are looking for a way of belonging to a whole, but a meaningful whole. You know, nobody wants to be Babbitt caught in a corporation, but we're looking for, you know, a way of being with others that really works for us, that feels authentic and real.
Well, Gish Jen's latest book is Tiger Writing, Art, Culture, and the Interdependent Self. You can hear her discuss the book even further. We've whetted your appetite now, I'm sure. She'll be at the Harvard Bookstore in Cambridge on Wednesday, March 27th. There's more information and an excerpt from the book at our website, radioboston.org. Gish Jen, such a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for coming in today.
It's been my pleasure.
And that's our program today. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.